From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening to wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, two guests, Jason Martell, Eric Parker, Mankind's Origins and Ancient Visitations, a classic Coast to Coast program. Well, here are some of the stories. Taco Bell ordered scallions removed from its 5,800 U.S. restaurants. Those are the green onions. After tests suggested they may be responsible for the E. coli outbreak that has sickened at least three dozen people in three states. The fast food chain said preliminary testing by an independent lab found three samples of green onions appeared to have a dangerous strain of the bacterium. The company would not immediately identify the supplier of the scallions, so it's kind of unclear whether contaminated green onions reached other restaurants or supermarkets. Tainted green onions from Mexico were blamed for a 2003 outbreak of hepatitis A in western Pennsylvania that was also traced to a Mexican restaurant. Four people died and more than 600 people were sickened after eating the green onions at a Chi-Chi's restaurant. I believe that you will probably find that the produce also came from across the border. The conditions there are extremely unsanitary. Extremely. And nobody's talking about that. There's a company called Jamba Juice Company. Those of you who live on the West Coast, you probably know about it. They tonight are warning consumers in the Southwest that smoothies containing strawberries might have been contaminated with a potentially deadly bacterium as well. The warning issued in consultation with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration applies to smoothies sold at Jamba Juice stores in Arizona, Southern Nevada, in Southern California from November 25th to December 1st. You probably already ate this. The bacterium can cause sometimes fatal infections in young children, the elderly, and others with weak immune systems. Very sad story out of Oregon. The body of James Kim, who left his stranded family in a car in Oregon wilderness to try to get help for them, was found Wednesday dead. Authorities were visibly emotional. They thanked Kim's family for their support during the search. Early reports had airborne rescuers spotting a flash in a heavily wooded area. They caught a glimpse of a man lying face down. Searchers were being lowered from the helicopter, and they found him. Today I got the call that I didn't want to get. Some of you get these calls once in a while. You know, for some time I've been telling you about a dear friend of mine that I have in St. Louis. She's 70 years old. Her name is Nina. Her dog had passed away a couple years ago, and I bought her a little puppy, and she named it Georgie. It's a little Brittany Spaniel. She has four cats. Well, I got a call from a friend of mine in St. Louis today that said, George, talked to Nina yet? And I said, no. She just had a heart attack. 70 years old, sad story, in shape, avid ice skater, and just caught up with her. She is resting in a hospital tonight as I speak. But to tell you what kind of person she is, she was feeling funny, strange, I guess, last night, backache. Didn't really put two and two together. Woke up this morning, went and skated, came back home, felt bad, took herself into the hospital, where an EKG revealed that she indeed had suffered a slight heart attack. Of course, to me, the word slight with a heart attack doesn't mean anything, but that's what they told her. And so while she was in the hospital emergency room resting, she said to the doctor, I've got to leave. I have a dog and I have four cats. I have to take care of them. The doctor, of course, said, no, you're not. And she said, yes, I am. And so she signed herself out with a pledge and promise that she would return. She went back to her house, fed the animals, and then drove back to the hospital where she is there now and will probably undergo an angiogram tomorrow morning. Then she called some friends and they're staying at her house watching the animals. Unbelievable. Get well, Nina. All U.S. combat brigades not necessary for force protection should be out of Iraq by the first quarter of 2008. But according to the Iraq Study Group, they are suggesting this in its widely anticipated report, recommending a path for the United States exit strategy from Iraq. The report says the goal for U.S. forces in Iraq would evolve from combat to support for Iraqi security forces by increasing the number of U.S. troops embedded in the Iraqi army fivefold, from 4,000 to 20,000. The report released on Wednesday says the situation in Iraq is grave. No path can guarantee success. It adds that the ability of the United States to influence events is diminishing and violence is increasing in scope. And you know what? It's something that we've talked about and we've known about for a long time. Well, this one goes to the Mother of the Year Award. A fed-up mother had her 12-year-old son arrested for rummaging through his great-grandmother's things and playing with his Christmas present early that he found. The mother called police after learning that her son had disobeyed orders and repeatedly took a Game Boy from its hiding place at the great-grandmother's house next door, and he played with it. He was arrested on petty larceny charges, taken to the police station in handcuffs, and held until his mother picked him up after church. A 9-year-old girl in England went sleepwalking, fell 30 feet from her bedroom window. She was lucky she landed on an old rolled-up carpet her dad had dumped on the driveway. Had he not done that, she could have died. As we reported last night with Richard C. Hoagland, new photographs from space suggest that water occasionally flows on the frigid surface of Mars, raising the possibility that the red planet is hospitable to life. New images taken by NASA's Mars Global Surveyor before it lost contact with us do not actually show flowing water, but rather they show changes in craters that provide the strongest evidence yet that water coursed through them as recently as several years ago, and perhaps is doing so even now. Ray Bradbury, the famed science fiction legend, 86 years old, author of The Martian Chronicles, he's excited about all of this, saying that it's even more exciting because we're going back to the moon and then on to Mars. In clouds of concern gathered on the eve of Thursday night's liftoff of the space shuttle Discovery, NASA downgraded launch chances to 40% due to weather. All these things going on in space. We got to bring in Richard C. Hoagland, our science advisor. So he's next on Coast to Coast AM. And because of this huge story of water on Mars today, we're going to keep Richard C. Hoagland for the entire hour. We'll take your phone calls at the half. Richard C. Hoagland, head of the enterprisemission.com, our self-appointed science advisor. You know, Richard, I don't want to say you've been vindicated, but I do want to congratulate you for 6 years ago sticking your neck out once again.
Wait. You just said self-appointed. I didn't appoint myself to anything.
No, self-appointed by me.
Well, okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you for the compliment. It's kind of nice, you know, if you last long enough. You know, I really want to meet your friend Nina. She's the kind of gal who really knows about longevity.
Oh, and you're a tough lady, I'm telling you, and I'm a little ticked at her today, Richard, honestly. I talked to her today when she was in the hospital, and a friend of mine who's a cardiologist is taking care of her. And, you know, I said, Nina, come on now. You knew something was wrong. Stay in the hospital. Her animals, Richard, come first. She puts them before her own life.
Having been there, having done that, attitude is very important. And as I said to you a few moments ago, with her attitude, I think her prognosis will be excellent.
Well, good. Thank you. Thank you. Talk about excellent. I think there's life on Mars.
Well, I do too, and it's amazing to watch these guys creep up on it tiptoe by tiptoe. I mean, I watched this press conference this morning, and I just had to smile because, you know, Malin is sitting there like the cat that swallowed the canary, and Edgett, his deputy, is sitting there like the canary. And, you know, it's like they're doing everything they can not to acknowledge that other folks have been down this trail before, and they're kind of playing catch-up.
Should Hoagland have been sitting up there with them?
Well, yeah, of course,
yeah,
because we were the first,
so,
as far as I can find, and Publish or Perish is the name of the game. In 2000, I noticed this mark, this streak, this dark thing, splotch on one of the surveyor images. And I sent it over to Barra, and I said, you know, this looks wet. This looks like water. And that's when we began to work with Efren Palermo and Jill England. Efren and Jill had done this extraordinary statistical map of thousands of these things all over Mars. And it was from their work, after they had seen what I had done, that we put together the idea that because they were concentrated in two separate locations on Mars, located 180 degrees apart, and they were probably liquid because they were located near the equator, where the temperatures during the day can get up to 80 degrees Fahrenheit, George. Remember I said last night that Mars is considered cold and glaciated?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's not really true. You know, and these guys keep talking about this cold, dry place. It's not cold. Even back in the last century, Lowell was measuring from Earth temperatures in excess of 50, 60, 70 degrees, which the last time I looked was well above the freezing point of water. So today, I watched these two guys sit there and lay out their photographs and their evidence and, you know, tiptoeing, drip, 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 up to the idea that, well, you know, what did they say? They said 10 years ago, we thought water only flowed billions of years ago on Mars. And then 5 years ago, we thought it only flowed millions of years ago with an M. And today, Dr. Christensen said, we think it's flowing today.
Like right now. Yep. Like,
yes. And I looked at the screen and I said rhetorically, guys, what about what we wrote 6 years ago, where we pointed out very gently the evidence, and then Palermo and England did stunning statistical work showing that these things have to be liquid now? In other words, again, NASA is a come-along because they didn't have the courage to say then what we have said now. And my question, of course, is political. What is the agenda? What are they afraid of? Why are they dealing with us like children? Why don't they just tell us the truth when they have the evidence? I mean, they have the evidence of this 5 years ago.
We put in a call to your old friend Ray Bradbury, and he couldn't come on the program, but he's quoted as saying, we're going to need water on Mars.
Absolutely.
He's right.
Now, the biggest thing from the press conference was Malin admitting that this actually is a mystery, because by all their lights, this stuff shouldn't be going on. They went at great lengths to point out that there are no heat sources that they can find. There's no mechanism to create an underground aquifer that would be active like Old Faithful. There's no reason why this stuff on a cold planet should be popping out and running downhill and leaving white frosty streaks, which is what the photographs show. So they're kind of mystified as to why this is going on. And in fact, one reporter asked them bluntly, does this mean your geophysical models of Mars are all wrong? And Malin quickly backed away and said, no, we basically have a good handle on it, but we don't really understand where this water could be coming from.
Well, you know, beyond the geysers on the planet here, which really aren't in lake beds, do we have anything on this planet that would have water gushing out of the ground?
Oh, sure. We have underground aquifers and springs all the time.
All right.
Yeah, particularly here in the Southwest. I mean, the analog to, you know, oases or water holes or springs in the Southwest is very apt. The question, of course, is where is the underground water source coming from? And because Mars kind of has died geologically, it's no longer, you know, hot inside. There's no really geothermal activity. Can you say geothermal applied to Mars? Areothermal would be the technical term.
Mm-hmm.
The big mystery is where is the water coming from? Because remember, their model is that Mars died billions of years ago.
And the source, how deep is the source?
That's right. And for it to percolate up against the problems of low air pressure and low temperatures at night where it would freeze solid and form a plug, I mean, you've got to have some pretty high hydraulic pressure to break an ice dam, which is what they were describing as the mechanism, and the sides of these craters, and to have the water then flow downhill in a kind of a bubbling avalanche until it freezes and evaporates into literally thin air. So the key thing here is, because this is happening within view of the cameras, you know, the before and after pictures you talked about a moment ago,
Yep. We
now know it's not billions of years ago or millions. It happened a year ago, last week, I mean, you know, but it's like now. And that raises extraordinary possibilities, as we hinted at last night, because if they found with this little incredibly tiny camera field of view, remember, Mars Surveyor, even if it's been in orbit for 10 years, has only taken like 1% of the surface of Mars in high resolution. If you can find this stuff with 1% photography, what's going on the other 99% that you haven't imaged at this resolution?
So in your opinion, these oceans of water that once, you know, was on the surface,
yep,
did it just all sink and it's pretty close to the surface?
No, that's a two-part question.
Okay.
Part of it left. Most of it probably left in the catastrophe in our model.
Blew off, evaporated.
Well, when you collide planets with debris,
it's gone.
Things go.
Yeah.
But the remainder of it went underground. It got covered over by sediments and muds and all that, and it's lurking there.
And it's getting replenished.
And it's absolutely, it's coming up. It's you know, because there is heat in Mars. Mars is not the dead place that they think, billions of years old. It's obviously had activity much more recently, and that's why they can't figure out how this water could, A, be there, and B, be liquid and be coming up, gushing up to the surface, and then breaking through the ice crust that would form to be seen in these photos as these bright frost-type streaks down the sides of a few of these craters.
Can you imagine before Mars lost its true atmosphere, how much oxygen must have been on that planet?
Well, you know, in terms of looking at the comprehensive model of what Mars used to be, there's little doubt in my mind that Mars used to be another Earth. I would say that even if we didn't have the artifacts and the evidence for
right.
incredible advanced civilization.
Right, and you've always said that it's possible that the Martians are us.
Exactly.
We are they.
Now, this new data point, this new discovery, this new confirmation makes what we've been saying, our scenario, even more probable.
Well, the fact that what you have said is, and you said it so long ago, has once again come true. Another thing that you've said has now come true. You know, you got to start looking at all the other things you've said, Richard. I know that you are working on another possible artifact on Mars this time, not
yes.
the moon. And I got to tell you, in my opinion, what you showed me at Joshua Tree on the moon, that android head, what you've got on Mars is more startling because it's real.
Well, I think it's organic. I think that we're looking at something that was alive as opposed to a robot, as we think the thing
uh-huh.
on the moon is. And that's all I can say right now. But when we lay it out and we lay out some background, I think it's going to be another compelling data point that our overall model, that Mars was once inhabited, that they were our great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmothers, is going to become closer to general acceptance because, as you say, these data points keep falling into place so neatly. And politically, it's all about, you know, being right. And it's not necessarily about being first, but it's nice to be first. And on this one, again, we are first.
And how fitting for me on this day as we talk with the two guests next hour about ancient astronauts and artifacts as well. This is really exciting. Give me a very brief shuttle update. What's going on?
We will probably not launch tomorrow. It's the 34th anniversary, by the way, of Apollo 17, a number and a name that you should now be intimately familiar with because
that's the
imagery of
yeah.
the head on the moon.
Yep.
34 years ago, we launched Apollo 17 at night, and tomorrow night they had hoped to launch the shuttle. By the way, do you know that December 7th is a 19.5 date?
I did not know that.
And I will. We don't have time for me to explain, but just accept it. It's a 19.5 date.
All right.
They're going to miss their window because of weather. Weather's closing in. There's going to be low overcast, about 40% chance of launch. I don't think they're going to make it. They'll recycle the count. They'll try to go the next day. Then they have a wind problem because the front's coming through. So I don't think we're going to get this thing off until next week, George, but it is the most complicated, incredibly complicated, and frankly risky mission that the shuttle and the space station have been involved in up to now. And we'll get into those details next week.
Okay, stick around, Richard. Let's take some phone calls. It's been a while since everybody had an opportunity to talk with you, all
okay.
right?
Okay.
Very good. And get ready also. Get your address ready for your Christmas presents that you'd like to make available to people to pick up the DVDs and the information from Joshua Tree as well. So get all that ready. Your toll-free number, I'll have you give that out when we come back. And we'll open up the phone lines now as well. Richard C. Hoagland, our guest this hour. Incredible discovery today. Finally, scientists saying what we always believed on this program, that Mars has water. It is flowing right now. And my co-author with the book Worker in the Light, Bill Burns, will be at the Borders Bookstore, Manhattan Beach, those of you in the Los Angeles area, this coming Saturday at 7 p.m. So go on by and meet Bill. He'll be signing the book Worker in the Light. And then on December 16th, 2 p.m., I'll be in San Diego at a coffee shop called Claire de Lume. And make sure you come by and see me there. Claire de Lune. It's a coffee shop in San Diego. So I'll be there. That'll be 2 o'clock. So after the program, I'll take a little nap and be on my way out to San Diego. So, Richard, on the EnterpriseMission.com website, I'm sure you've got some great pictures for people to look at.
Yes, if people go and log on, if my webmaster has done what he was supposed to be doing earlier tonight, they'll be able to see not only the pictures from the NASA briefing this morning showing the streaks that are indicating liquid water now on Mars, but they will also see a link to the press release that we wrote and sent around the country 6 years ago telling everybody that this, in fact, was going on, you know, almost a decade before NASA got around to admitting it. You know, what's really important about this, George, is that this opens up, if you'll pardon the pun, the floodgates.
Yes, literally.
Because NASA's mantra for the last several years has been, follow the water, because water means life.
Mm-hmm.
With the discovery now, the scientifically validated, by the numbers, peer review discovery of liquid water on Mars by our official local neighborhood space agency, it means that life on Mars is quite likely there.
I mean, right now. I can't imagine having oceans of water, gullies of water, a stream of water on Mars and not having one microbe in it.
I can't believe that. Everywhere on Earth we find liquid water, we find microbes. And we know
By the trillions.
In fact, there's more tonnage underground, around underground aquifers of microbes, than there is of all the above ground life on Earth. That was a big discovery some years ago that maybe life on Earth really is represented overwhelmingly by the little guys and not the big guys that we're more familiar with because we live on the surface. The key thing here is, remember a couple years ago, Mars Express, Pimentel found, and Formosano found methane. Right?
Right.
And it followed the water.
Yeah.
Where the spectrometers on the spacecraft saw water in the atmosphere, gaseous water, they also saw methane. Methane is destroyed very quickly by sunlight. It has a very short half-life. It has to be replenished. And the most likely way of replenishing methane is little beasties, mm-hmm. little microbes. So tonight we're on the cusp of NASA's next announcement, George. Remember? Drip, drip, drip. The next big announcement has got to be we found microscopic life on Mars, which then brings me to this classic statement by my old friend, of course now departed, Carl Sagan. Remember, Carl said that if we found as much as a microbe independently evolved on Mars, it would mean that the universe was teeming with life.
Yeah.
In billions and billions of places, et cetera, et cetera. So this is now putting us right at the edge of why we did the conference in Wisconsin on God, Man, and E.T., because it's suddenly no longer academic. It's suddenly, George, something that people can't say, oh, I'll think about that tomorrow, to quote what's-her-name in Gone with the Wind. We have to now think about it tonight, because if there are lowly little microbes sipping their little cocktails of water on Mars as we're speaking, there could be all kinds of other life, intelligence, extraordinary. extraordinary extravaganzas going on, to which the ruins that I've been looking at on the moon and Mars are only the first blush of the wonders to be found if our agency will simply open the drawers of things they have kept secret for so many years.
Well, you've got an incredible thought process, Richard. Let's take some calls. First time caller line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Les. I'm calling from Vancouver.
Hey, Les, thanks.
I understand NASA's need to divulge this information in trickles because the shock of it is a little bit much for the person to take. I personally had contact with an extraterrestrial about 8 months ago. I've filmed and photographed over 50 UFOs in the last 8 months. And I'll tell you, it was quite a balance for a while to juggle the idea my previous reality with this new reality. And we know, and I know you guys need no convincing, that it goes far beyond water and microbes on Mars. So I'm wondering, Richard and George, what do you think it's going to take? What can we do to speed up this process of disclosure? Because we need this contact to continue, and we need it to grow, and we need it to grow quickly. What do you think we can do?
Well, the thing that I want to do, and I think George is with me on this, is we want to launch a campaign with this audience, with this extraordinary, special, unique, global audience of coast to coast around MRO, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. With that spacecraft, remember, we've now lost Mars Global Surveyor.
Yeah,
it has kind of wandered over the hill.
How ironic that this data came from that.
I don't think it's coincidence, George. I can't put my finger on it, but the disappearance of Mars Surveyor on its 10th anniversary, and then a few days later, this major announcement, I just there's something in the back of my mind that says these are pieces of a puzzle that you're not seeing properly, but they're not disconnected. There's a political rationale here. It's kind of like removing the one player to make room for the new player, which, of course, can photograph ruins built by intelligent beings, our great-great ancestors, if our model is correct. And this audience can play an incredibly incisive part in getting those photographs taken. You've seen, I presume, the photo that MRO took of the little Spirit rover on the edge of Victoria Crater.
Mm-hmm.
And you know it has a little 3-inch stovepipe antenna on top that's an Omni antenna. Do you know that you can see the shadow of that 3-inch wide stovepipe antenna in the photograph?
No.
From almost 200 miles up with this incredible 20-inch telescope on this MRO spacecraft looking down on Mars? If we were able to, with this audience, to demand that it photograph, that spacecraft photograph Cydonia, just to name the famous place, we will see the girders that I've been talking about for so many years. And that, of course, would put this really over the top. And people would then have to acknowledge that not only are there microbes in the universe, but as our caller just said, this is the presage of much more extraordinary and wondrous and crucial things for the future of the human species.
Wildcard line, you're on with Richard C. Hoagland. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Rita in Tucson.
Hey, Rita.
Hi, Mr. Hoagland and George. I greet you, and I just really have a very serious matter to discuss.
Okay.
In that, you're talking about water, and we know that in the 1960s, they used iodine to kill things that were not conducive to the human condition, and then they changed that to now they're using chlorine, which we know chlorine not only alters minerals and everything else to be carcinogenic, but it does not do anything but clear the water and make it clear. And even in airplane water.
Hold on for a second, Rita. Where are you headed?
I'm headed to this. Are we looking at microbes in Mars water that would actually be the demise of the human population?
Wow, the Martian Chronicles.
Is anybody looking at the fact that there are microbes in this water on our Earth, like Listeria and Staphylococcus and other things?
Dear, there are microbes
that nothing will kill except iodine.
There are microbes.
And if you're not looking at a high iodine content in the Mars water, and you're going to bring that down here, or are you just going to kill us all?
Well, that's an interesting film.
The Andromeda Strain. Let's do a movie.
There are no
plans. Look, she has a point. What happens of contamination? Okay.
Well, the obvious thing is you don't bring the stuff home. I mean, why do you think we have a space station?
Right.
One of the useful things of the space station is you bring any sample return into us, or preferably even on the moon. I mean, the moon would be a really nice place to analyze little beasties, right, from another planet?
Right.
Because it's separated by 250,000 miles of hard vacuum. You could literally keep it in a lab that you could only reach by spacesuit. So you'd have isolation on isolation. In other words, no one is going to pull the trigger and do something dumb and stupid if we have an environment where living things could be alive. For one simple reason, you would not want to forward contaminate, as the panelist said this morning, with probes from Earth and kill the little Martians. You want to analyze them, find them, decode them, understand their life cycle, etc., in ways that preserve both life on Mars and, of course, life on Earth.
East of the Rockies, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
It's me, Chris, from New Haven.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. I've listened to this program for years, and I have a great amount of respect and admiration for Mr. Hoagland. Your scientific knowledge is truly spectacular. When you talk about stuff, it's very obvious that you know what you're talking about. And I've listened for years with great interest about the Cydonia region of Mars and whatnot. And my question is concerning your pretty confident stance that there are artificial structures on our moon.
Mm-hmm.
Is that not correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Now, if that indeed is the case, why is it that, you know, something as close as the moon is to us, why has that not been able to be, you know, verified by the mainstream scientific community? I mean, it seems like when I've watched NASA TV, as I do on occasion, and I see those guys, the room full of guys watching the monitors and stuff, and whenever they have the least amount of success with something, when something succeeds, when a satellite is launched successfully, or a docking is made successfully, or they land something on Mars successfully, that whole room full of guys goes wild. I mean, they clap. They you could see the joy in their faces.
Mm-hmm.
That they, holy cow, we did it. Yes, yes. You know, and I have such a hard time believing that bunch of guys that are busting their butts and their brains to investigate every nook and cranny of every project that they send out there, that they would be able to contain that they would be able to keep quiet about anything that was the least bit spectacular.
Well, that opens up your comments, Richard, because I know what you're going to say. Those guys and gals, they're not the ones.
They're not in the loop. They don't know. It's kept from them. Because you're absolutely right. They could not contain the secret.
No, they'd go nuts. They'd be whooping and hollering.
You know, George, we really owe it to this audience to do an entire show on what we found on the moon, the evidence, the logic, the data, the leaks we've had, the people that are now talking, the information provided. We just got today the magnified prints of the Ina formation that I talked about a couple weeks ago. Absolutely stunning. You can almost see the windows in the buildings. They're that good.
You know, I'd love to do it, though, with Ingo Swann, who could also talk about what he saw on the moon.
Who had remote viewed many years ago. And I haven't talked to Ingo in years
He's coming back. You know, he's been a dear friend of my late aunt.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't know that. He didn't know we were related until we passed it on to him. And then he got all excited again. He has been ill, but I think he's doing much better now, and he might be in a position to do a full program.
That would be a very interesting show.
We'll make the entree.
Okay.
Okay, we'll do that. Let's take a few more calls, Richard, and then I want you to, because we're coming up to the holiday season. Is there still time for people to
absolutely
pick these things up? Okay.
We have the elves working around the clock, George.
All right, everybody, get ready to write some information down. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. I have a question, Richard.
Okay.
It's my understanding that Earth isn't the only planet in the solar system undergoing global warming. I mean, even Pluto is warming up somewhat.
Absolutely.
Okay, now, might that not explain why, especially at this time, water would even be more likely to be rising to the surface of Mars?
You are a genius.
And
you are an absolute genius.
Not only that, but it's my understanding that as the permafrost in Earth's Arctic Circle melts, that methane rises from there, too.
Well, because it's biologically sequestered by microorganisms, you know, centuries and thousands of years before. But let me get back to your global warming
thing.
Sure,
go ahead.
Because you really put your finger on something very important. Do you remember, George, some years ago when Art was doing global warming programs and he talked about data that like 2 or 3 miles down in the Atlantic, the temperatures in the ocean were increasing?
Oh, sure. And, you know, and Jim Berkland talks about that all the time.
And there's no mechanism to get solar energy down 3 miles
right.
under the North Atlantic.
Yeah, Berkland says it's volcanoes.
It's not. It's hyperdimensional input of energy from the ether that we discussed at Joshua Tree.
Interesting.
And Wilcock and I have been combing through the data and putting on the website, the Enterprise website, papers. In fact, we had a series called The Interplanetary Day After Tomorrow, where we collated all this data, and I had David write it up. This caller has put his finger on a very important point,
sure has,
which I had not thought of until just this moment. Because if the physics is changing, as I've been saying, then yes, you will get warming from the interior as well as from the sun, and it will warm in certain regions, particularly if they're geometrically located properly on Mars, like on Earth. It will warm the available materials, including water, and if you warm water about 32 degrees, it flows. That is an absolutely genius insight, and I really thank you.
So it's melting.
It's melting from within. It's because the physics of the whole solar system is changing. In fact, I did write a paper about a year ago called The Return of Martian Spring, which talked about these possibilities being cyclic, that you have them come in, 20 or 30-year cycles. And when Lowell was making his observation, remember when he saw the canals and he saw what he thought was vegetation?
Yes, yes.
And then during the space program, we went to Mars and Carl looked at the pictures and said, I can't see any canals. Well, what if Martian spring, because of the cyclic resonance of the physics, is coming again and the planet is warming up from within because of the hyperdimensional transfer of energy and the water within is simply melting through a mechanism that the mainstream physicists simply haven't accounted for as yet.
And wouldn't it be incredible if vegetation starts to grow?
Eventually, if this model is right, we will see a reappearance on the surface of the bigger stuff, which is probably in a dormant state. I mean, the ecosystem on Mars that we're looking at is not primitive, I don't think.
All right, Godman and E.T., DVDs and Christmas presents.
Everything's available on the website, enterprisemission.com. Just go and click on the links, or call our 800 number, which is 1-877-345-6222. That's 877-345-6222. And we're putting out this special Christmas offer on the first DVD from Joshua Tree. I am going to sign all of the DVDs sold between now and Christmas personally. I'm probably dumb to do that because I have not signed that many things for a long, long time. But as a special Christmas present to this audience, I will sit here with a gold signing pen and sign the actual DVDs.
You sent me a draft, and you didn't even sign it for me.
Because I'm going to send you the real one. That was really a preview, okay?
All right, very good.
The real one. I went out and bought the pens today to do this. So if you want to get this pre-Christmas offer, I'm not going to do it next year. Only between now and Christmas, you will have a signed copy of some remarkable 2012 conversations that we initiated at the Joshua Tree Conference.
Richard, great job on this Mars prediction that has turned out to be fact.
Thank you, my friend.
Very impressed. I'll be back in a moment. Jason Martell, Eric Parker, Ancient Astronauts on Coast to Coast AM.